and get some information that we need to have. So, with that, I'm going to open the Rules Committee, and I'm going to open a public hearing. Did I get the right deal in front of me? On House Bill 2749. Oh, work session is carried over on Senate Bill, on House Bill 2749. We can't take action, however. But we can have informational part.
You can have invited testimony.
So we're going to have some invited testimony in our work session that we're opening on House Bill 2749. So with that, Representative Esquivel and Senator Przanski, appreciate having you here.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I remember when Senator Przanski was on the good side of the chambers.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Those are fond days.
I have been here for a number of years, and I have not ever had that experience.
Oh, yeah.
It must have been a long time ago. It's
amazing how much he can backslide when you're
right?
To the other side.
Had darker hair in the
Darker hair then.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, Roy Przanski, state senator representing District 4, which includes parts of Lane and Douglas counties. Thank you very much for allowing us to be part of the invited testimony during this subcommittee on meeting in the work session on House Bill 2749. I believe the chair and committee members wanted myself and Representative Esquivel to give an update as to some of the amendments that we understand are before the committee, and also some information as to what we've learned from OYCC, the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, as to some of the gender issues and the demographics of the programs that they serve. I want to make certain that everyone understands that the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps is an agency of the state, and as such, they receive funding through multiple sources. Specifically, the money that were the bill that's before you would, in fact, allow for the amusement permit fee of $10 to be increased by $10 to $20 per machine on an annual basis. This additional money would go into the account for Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, which would in fact allow them to have an additional revenue source and funding to provide to programs that actually provide applications for grants from OYCC. It's very important that everyone understands that OYCC is kind of like a clearinghouse of this money for programs who are seeking to put at-risk youth to work. There are two programs that OYCC works with or has under their purview. One is an in-school program that's basically a year-long program during the school year, and then when the school year ends, they shift into what's known as their summer programs. The information and speaking with John Asher, who is the director of OYCC, he has given the following information to me to share with the committee. During the school year program, there's about an 8-to-1 match that OYCC receives for the money it provides to these in-school programs. Currently, the amount of money that goes to an in-school program maxes at $20,640. The participating schools or programs that are running a alternative style school has to come up with the equivalent of, again, about an 8-to-1 match. There are a few exceptions to the 8-to-1 down to like 7-to-1, but it's, I think clearly we could say that the investment from the community and the schools is somewhere in the range of $150,000 to receive this supplemental $20,000+. On the summer program, that is about a 4-to-1 match. And speaking with Mr. Asher, he says that the current grants that are being awarded is about for $12,000. That $12,000 assists in providing the resources to fund 4 kids and about half of a crew leader. And then again, the programs themselves are putting in somewhere around $45,000 to $50,000 as their bargain into the receipt of this grant money. Now, and hearing from some of the members of this committee and others, there's been some concerns as to the makeup of the youth that participate in these programs, and specifically what actions have been taken to deal with, I'm going to call it parity slash gender basis. Representative Esquivel is going to go through some of the material that we have received from Mr. Asher, and I do want to just note for the record that since these are not specifically OYCC programs that are getting the money from OYCC, OYCC does not have a direct control over who applies to those programs. All they can do is encourage the programs to seek a diverse group of at-risk kids. We do know from the information that has been provided to us that when economic times have become harder, they are seeing more young women applying to participate in these programs than they have in the past. The theory that they have received from some of the directors of the programs that seek the grant money is that because it is tight times, there's not as many opportunities for young women that are at risk, and they have chosen to actually go this route because they don't have other opportunities that they may prefer personally to be involved in as compared to a program that is very trying and very demanding of their time and their energies, as you can imagine, building trail as compared to maybe working in an office requires a lot more sweat and effort, and it's reasonable to expect that if someone was given the chance to be in air conditioning instead of being out in the hot sun, they would probably want to do that. So with that, I'd like to allow Representative Esquivel to go forward with the information that we received regarding demographics.
And could the two, one of the two of you answer the questions about the dash ones, twos, and threes?
Okay, the dash ones, my understanding, this committee kind of looked at those, and there are some issues into constitutionality. I would submit to you that based on seeing those for the first time, I believe it was yesterday morning, I was very shocked to see that someone would request gender parity as a criteria and believe that that is subject to a constitutional issue. The dash twos that are before the committee, I've had an opportunity to speak with Mr. Asher this morning, and he is 100% in favor of these amendments. What we do want to make certain is that the committee understands, again, since the Corps is more of a clearinghouse, that they do already, and they will continue to develop and implement outreach plans to recruit Corps participants. And what that means specifically are programs, and that they will be insisting and requesting that the programs themselves take that step at the local level and reaching out to get a broad base of at-risk children from both male and female, and that they will in fact be asking for them to provide to OYCC what efforts they take now, what efforts will they be instituting in the future to try to make certain that all at-risk children feel that they are welcomed to participate in these type of programs. Now, I understand there may be a dash three. I would just only say to the chair and the committee members, my very brief review of those, which I do not have a copy in front of me, appears to deal with if you were contracting for services. Again, I would submit to you, we are not contracting for services in that sense. What we are doing is awarding grants to programs that serve at-risk kids. And I would say that they are, in fact, in compliance with the requirements of state law as it pertains to any contracting or purchasing that they do as an organization, OYCC.
Okay, we'll have some more from that a little later from Representative Shields, but first with the Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Esquivel, Representative District 6. The gender thing came up. In fact, it was in a revenue committee. That it was focused on was a breakdown of actually the alternative schools, which is interesting. As Senator Przanski just outlined, it would seem logical that you would rather work with an air conditioner than you would out in the woods in the heat. But as it turns out, our participant is 29% female, 71% male, and that is in the alternative schools, which is a local issue, and they do the selection process. And I believe probably you, Mr. Chair, would know more about that than probably the three of us on how that criteria works. The second issue that did not come up was that OICC in its summer program, is 57% male, 43% female, which is higher than our alternative school programs. And to make the total is, if you combined the summer programs with the alternative schools, we would be about 63% male, 37% female. Having said that, we went and asked the Max Williams to give us a breakdown of what our incarceration rates are and our at-risk in the adult population is. Currently, with incarceration in the state of Oregon, 7.89% of the population are female. Currently, the people on post-prison supervision, 14.5% are female. On local control, 15.32% are female. Probation is 29.7% total female. Which makes, if you combine the total of the number and do the percentage, it's just a little over 18%. So in actuality, our program is twice this average of female participation than what's incarcerated on probation or detained locally. So I think we're doing an exemplary job in that aspect, but the summer program is the one that really hits home to me. It's 43% female participation, and that's kids out in the woods, kids doing summer jobs, making trails, doing estuaries on the coast, enhancing habitat. And I think that says it all, because that's what this program's really about.
Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Chip Shields. I represent District 43, Inner North and Northeast Portland. And the reason I drafted the dash threes is that, unfortunately, I was at the point where I voted no on the floor on the bill because, in Ways and Means, when we approved, I believe it was either the grant application or the receive the expenditure limitation for the funds, federal funds from the stimulus dollars, we asked on the record whether or not community-based organizations would have the potential to apply for those. And it sounds like the organization did that. But my concern is that, having talked to an organization in my district, the Youth Employment Institute, that has a contract with the U.S. Forest Service and does a lot of these works for the, you know, the Water Bureau in Portland, taking disadvantaged kids and putting them to work on you know, fixing trails and those type of projects, that they were not informed that this money would be available, and they felt like they should have been. And when they looked into it, they found out that what the management decision was is to allow the contracting to organizations that they had a, quote, existing relationship with. Now, I'm not saying they did anything improper or that was a poor decision. I'm just trying to use this amendment to leverage the fact that I think we as a legislature would like any organization that wants a shot at those $6 million or so in federal dollars to have a crack at it. And I don't feel real strongly that the dash threes have to be moved into the bill, but if Mr. Archer wants to give me a call and just provide some assurances or help me understand what's going on with the contracting of the federal dollars, that's primarily the concern that I simply wanted to do, that I expressed on the floor, and that I'm expressing now.
Any questions for this panel? Any comments to Representative Shields' discussion?
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm not really not in a position to really comment. Mr. Asher would be the only one, I think, that would be able to say how the advertising or information went out. I can tell the committee that we were informed that they gave a general notice of the money being available for for application. Now, how far, how broad, and what means were used outside of what is the, let's say, current and previous applicants for that money. I don't know.
Okay. Very good. Any other discussion with this group? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We're going to leave the work session open. There's another meeting going on in which three of my members are at. They should be here shortly, and that way we can actually work this bill if we get there. But at the same time, I see I have another senator in the room. We're always happy to have them. And we anticipate moving over to tomorrow the Senate Bill 507A, 508A, and 3498. So that's kind of the rest of the work we're going to move to tomorrow. But if you would like to have, if you would like us to take some testimony, I'd be glad to open a public hearing. Which bill? Both of them?
Both.
I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 507A and 508A. And 508A, 7 and 8A. So we've got both of them open. And with that, we'll take some testimony from our distinguished senator guest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Moniz Anderson, and I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. And I'm here to support both Senate Bills 507A and 508A. This comes as a consensus bill, and a lot, believe me, a lot of work has gone into this. There were numerous meetings on the Senate side, including the Oregon Medical Association, American Health Insurance Plans, Health Net, LifeWise, Kaiser, ODS, Pacific Source Health Plans, Providence, Regents, and United Healthcare. So a lot of work has gone into this bill. 508 basically is... it adds structure and fairness to the overpayment recovery process that physicians go through. Currently, if an insurer mistakenly pays a claim or overpays a claim, they have an unlimited amount of time to seek a refund or offset the reimbursement on a future claim. And due to timely filing rules, physicians, providers do not have the same timelines, and it can sometimes be too late for a provider to resubmit claims to the appropriate insurer, and oftentimes providers end up taking a loss on such claims. So basically what this bill would do would be to put a timeline for physicians and insurers when seeking an overpayment refund from the other party, and it goes into that, and I won't take much more time to explain that, but it is standardizing the time. It'll give both the provider and the insurer a level playing field in pursuing payments and keeping all records on file. So that basically is Senate Bill 508. And Senate Bill 507, again, consensus bill, the same players at the table, numerous meetings working on this. And I'm sure that you've heard numerous times you've heard about the complex and how time-consuming it takes a newly licensed physician or a new Oregon physician to see patients and then be reimbursed for their services. And sometimes this long credentialing process that health plans require providers to undergo only serves to exacerbate the access to care issues that we have in our state. So this is a solution to that problem. It adds much-needed timelines to the health care credentialing process. Insurers would have 90 days after receiving a complete application by a physician to make credentialing decisions. And during this credentialing process, they would be able to see patients and be reimbursed at non-participating provider rates at the very least. It still retains quality of care measures by saying that insurers are not required to pay physicians during the credentialing process if they have been previously denied participation or terminated from a health plan. Anyway, that's briefly what the two bills are all about, and hopefully none of these bills are being held hostage for some other bills that you may want to see get through. And I do understand the political process, but these two have had a lot of work by a lot of people, and I would hate to see them go by the wayside. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Appreciate it. Any questions? None? Thank you very much. Is there anybody, now that we have those two open, that would probably not be here tomorrow if this were to happen? Seeing no one else, I'm going to close our public hearings on 507A and 508A, and both of them carried over to tomorrow, along with carrying over 3498 to tomorrow.
We still don't have the advance on
for the 2749 for the dash two.
Okay. I like the dash twos.
Move the dash twos, Mr. Chair.
I think we could move the dash twos.
Are we in a work session on House Bill 2749?
We are in a work session on 2749.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2749.
Representative Berger moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2749. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. We do not have the fiscal on the dash two, so we can't move them today anyway.
If you mind to hold it open, Teresa's trying to get it.
Okay, we are working on that. Do we want to take a short little recess and see if they come in a few minutes so we can move it? That way we get it to the floor center. So,
I find that I'm allergic to this room, so we okay. Do need a recess.
So we're going to take a short recess. And, well, let's open the hearing.
Yeah.
We're going to call it back from recess, open our rules meeting. We did check. We don't have the fiscal?
We do not have the fiscal.
And it's basically the amendments actually have a part on the dash twos that say they take effect on 012.
Is that correct? It moves one of the dates to 2012. And that is causing some concern that it makes very indeterminate the fiscal impact.
Mr. Chair, sorry to
yes.
The last latest arrival here. We're on 2749, is that right?
2749-2.
Thank you.
Repealed.
Section 2 of the 29 Act is repealed July 1st, 2012. That's the repealing date. So for some reason that's causing them a little bit of angst. They still tend to believe that it won't cost anything. So I'm feeling comfortable with that. It's a revenue builder. If you guys are comfortable, we can suspend the rules and send it to the floor.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I would move to suspend the rules for the purposes of sending House Bill 2749 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation without the fiscal and revenue statements.
There is a revenue statement.
Pardon?
There is a revenue statement.
There is a revenue statement, just a fiscal.
Without a fiscal statement.
So, Representative Gelser has moved that we suspend the rules for the purpose of moving House Bill 2749 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation without the fiscal statement. Is there any objection, discussion?
Discussion.
Discussion.
Just to ask, Mr. Chair, the dash twos have already been adopted?
They have.
Okay, thank you.
So, Representative Girard.
I will give this a courtesy vote today.
Okay. So, is there any objection to suspending the rules? The answer is no, so we've done that. I will accept a motion for the amended bill. Representative Gelser, do you want to make that motion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2749 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gelser moves House Bill 2749 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, we'll take a roll call vote.
Representative Girard?
Aye.
Representative Gelser?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
Excused.
Representative Reed?
Aye.
Vice Chair Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Edwards?
Aye.
Chair Roblin?
Aye. Motion passes. Is there anyone here? I will ask Representative Escobar if he is still would like to carry this bill. If not, is there anyone else that would like to carry it?
I would be happy to carry it if Representative Escobar does not wish
to. Then I will talk to Escobar and give him the first opportunity. With that, we'll close our work session on House Bill 2749. Also, so you note, we have moved all the other bills over to tomorrow. So with that, unless there's anything, we are going to adjourn our rules meeting for today. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.